Welcome to Emil Franzink's Voices of the West, dedicated to the principle that America was better off when our TV shows featured cowboys instead of lawyers.
And in the words of the great Gabby Hayes,
You're turn tootin'.
I played the wrong one, but whatever. Welcome to another edition of Emil Franzink's Voices of the West. I'm Harry Alexander, Bunker de France across the way.
You're turn tootin'.
And way across the way in Los Angeles is our good friend Todd Roberts. Howdy, sir.
Hello, gentlemen.
Howdy.
Great to be with you.
Indeed, sir. And we've got a great guest coming up here, Lindsay Linton Buck, and she's got this book called Women Shaping the West, Stories from Wyoming. Lindsay, welcome to the program. We're going to get to you in just a bit, but first, Bunker de France has some stuff that he needs to take care of there.
A lot of you folks out there are going to be tickled to death because I'm still bringing to you Bunker's Bunkhouse. And the good, the bad, and the bovine.
Without the theme.
But I'm not doing the weekly crime travel. What I'm doing is I'm bringing to you an immediate release. I had the pleasure of help manning the Western Writers of America booth at the Tucson Book Festival, one of the largest in the country, 2 days worth of bookies. And what I'm going to do, though, is they announced the 2026 Spur Award winners and finalists, and that is kind of like the Academy Award of Western Writers. Now, I'm just going to run through the winners. The finalists, they're just going to have to mope and not know what they did. Anyhow, we're going to start out with biography, and the winner was The Real Thrilling Events of Bank Robber Henry Starr, From Gentleman Bandit to Movie Star and Back Again by Mark Archuleta.
Boy, that was a good book and a great interview, too.
We had him on the show. We got to visit with him over the weekend at an event honoring Russell True. The next category is Children's Picture Book. Now, picture this. It has pictures in it. The winner was A Home for Steamboat by author Kerry Rislow and illustrator Zachary Pullen. Now, for those of you who don't know who Steamboat is, our guest could probably tell you. I'll tell you anyway. That's one of the world's most famous bucking horses. And when you see Wyoming license plate, that's Steamboat on there. Now, moving on to contemporary nonfiction books, the winner was Saving the Big Sky, a chronicle of land conservation in Montana by Bruce A. Bugbee, Robert J. Kieseling, and John B. Wright. It took three guys because Montana is so big. Contemporary novel is the winner is Of Saints and Rivers by Jim Logan. Documentary script, nobody won. Drama script, now we're talking. Sarah's Oil by Cyrus Nowrest and Betty Griffin Nowrest. That's a husband and wife writing team. Oh, first nonfiction book. This is given to somebody they may have been writing for years, but this is their first Western book published. And it's The Windows of His Heart, Chief Joseph of the Nez Perce by Louise Linehan Walls. First novel. This is important. This is not nonfiction. This is fiction. Winner, Home of the Spirit Animals by Sid Raschke. Historical nonfiction book. Winner, The Undiscovered Country, Triumph, Tragedy, and the Shaping of the American West by Paul Andrew Hutton. And this guy is a super-duper foundational writer. He won the Spur during COVID and never got his award. I never got it in personal. Bob Bowles Bell still has it. Historical novel, winner, Arkansas Black by Alexander Blevins. Juvenile nonfiction book. The winner was Carrie Ingalls, The Forgotten Sister by Clarissa Willis, and we're going to try and get her on the show sometime in the future. A juvenile novel, winner, Home of the Spirit Animals by Sid Raschke. Poem, The Old Ones by Kai Raef, and it was published in Authentic or something like that, a self-published set of poems. Romance novel. Now, this is the category, and back in the 30s and the 20s, almost all Westerns were published under romance. And it was The Last Laugh of C.K. Krieger, who was a super-duper writer. Short fiction. Winner, Point of Impact by Mickey Furman, she was also with us in the book, a lovely lady, very talented singer and songwriter. She is writing as Vaughn McKee. Short nonfiction, winner, The Ghost of Mountain Meadows by Paul Andrew Hutton. I just talked about him. And he was writing that for the May-June issue of True West. The song was Roads and Barbed Wire by Joel White. And we're going to finish up with traditional novel, winner, Lost and Broken Things by Linda Standifer. Now, I want all you folks to rush out here and buy every one of those to help support the Western Writers.
And congratulations to all of our friends at the Western Writers of America.
And the finalists.
And the finalists. And, hey, if your book didn't make it, hey, you know, there's always again.
Yeah, you're like our friend Doug Hawkins. He went through many years of finalists, and then he finally won it a couple of times.
Yeah, or Boggs, who...
Oh, 10 times. I asked him when I saw him out there, the first thing I said is... did you make the list? And you know Johnny, he's a pretty humble man, and he said,
All right, let's welcome our guest today, Lindsay Linton Buck. And the book is Women Shaping the West, Stories from Wyoming. Welcome to our program, Lindsay.
Thank you, guys.
Pleasure to have you. And we are talking to Lindsay from Jackson, Wyoming. I've never been up to Wyoming. My mother-in-law lived in Wyoming for a while, and I always wanted to go visit, but never got up there. It's a beautiful country.
It is. We are the 10th largest state in the country and the least populated.
Wow.
So yeah. Wyoming is mostly rural and wild. I grew up in Powell, which is a small farm town in the northwest part of the state. It's desert basin, arid, open, lots of farmland, and now I live in Jackson, which is a much different dynamic than the rest of the state. It's a very dynamic community.
It's got population, right?
it has a little more. Yeah.
And you get all the flatlanders coming up here and visiting.
Oh, okay, all right. Yeah, well, that's a good size city, 100,000. Nothing wrong with
that. Not Jackson. Jackson's about 10,000.
Oh, 10,000. Okay.
Lindsay, let me ask you this. Do the flatlanders that come up and visit outnumber the locals?
We do have quite a bit of people that move here from all over. But most people, especially if you're moving to Jackson, you have to be pretty hardy. We are in the Grand Tetons. We are one of the gateways to Yellowstone. Mm-hmm. It is one of the more... 6-month winter type of places in Wyoming. So you have to be pretty hardy still to endure.
Yeah. And
the mountains and the elevation we're at 6,300 feet.
So. Lots of weather.
Well, you're fifth generation Wyomingian. So tell us about the first four generations.
Well, I share one of the pictures in my book. It was my great great grandfather, Alexander Linton. He came to Metitzi, Wyoming, which is still a very small ranch town near Powell, where I grew up in the Bighorn Basin. And he came from Montreal, Canada. He came to his uncle. They were cattle ranchers for a while and then shifted into business. So he had a mercantile, the Metitzi Mercantile. It's still there. It's, I think, back up and running. It's gone through several iterations. But most of my family, the Linton family, they've been business owners, community stewards. My dad and my grandpa had farm and ranch stores that served the area, and they were just very involved in community. So that's a lot of my work, even though I went a creative path. I'm a photographer by trade. When I moved home to Wyoming, it was very much instilled in me that you contribute to your community and your state how you're able to, and for me, that's through storytelling.
Okay, you're the owner and director of Jackson Hole Photo Studios. I have to ask you this. I don't care where you point your camera or how good you are. Up there, you cannot get a bad photo.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. It's pretty magnificent.
All right, your book, Women Shaping the West, 25 Stories of Impactful Wyoming Women Told Through Medium Format Film Photography and Narratives. More than 100 photographs talk about the suffrage story of Wyoming. And my goodness, this is quite an endeavor here. What caused you to come about and make this kind of a book?
Yeah, it's been a long, diligent journey, I like to say, because the first story that I produced was almost 10 years ago. And so it's been over a decade that I've been devoted to these stories. Even though I have very deep roots in Wyoming, I never imagined I'd come home. And that's a pretty common story for Wyoming kids, just the export of talent and young people. We tend to leave the state and look for opportunities elsewhere. And that was a big part of my story, especially being a creative. I did never think I could have a future in Wyoming. And so when I did move home, I opened up my photo studio. I was living in Jackson, which is sort of a bubble. It's not necessarily representative of the rest of the state. And I did feel disconnected from that. So I kind of wanted to turn this idea I'd had for so long of Wyoming as limiting. And when I really confronted that question, I couldn't say with 100% certainty that was true. And so this project really became my way to see what was possible through the lens of my peers. Mm-hmm. And it was this incredible adventure. I traveled over 15,000 miles to meet with these 25 women. And it's a really multifaceted collection of stories, from artist and Supreme Court justice to a sheep rancher. That was a super fun story to tell. I got to meet them at sheep camp, at the base of the Wind River Mountains, sleep in the wagon. And, you know, I'd called them 2 weeks before. That was Mickey Tolman's family. And I had heard about them, and they said, "Well, we're going to sheep camp in a couple of weeks. Can you join us?" I said, "Absolutely." Mm-hmm. So that's a lot of how this project unfolded. It was just one story after the next, and got to 25. Most of the production happened in the first couple of years of starting the project, so mostly between 2017 and 2019. Uh-huh. Then I produced an exhibit. Then I became a mom. Then I became a mom again. So life really changed, and I mostly focused on just keeping my exhibit going. And it was several years later when I had the energy and a little more brain power to say, okay, I think I can bring the book to life now. So it's been with me over all these life phases. And I think for me too, just as an artist, a creative, a mom, a business owner, what I want other people to know is, you know, you can bring your dream to life. It might not happen on the timeline that you want, but you can make it on the timeline that works for you. And it was really important to me to create a record. You guys, I think, are all historians and love history. You know the value of the physical object.
Yep.
It carries an energy. It preserves stories. It's so important to me to add a female voice back to Wyoming's cultural history and the story of the West. So I'm really proud of this book, even though it did, you know, come about kind of years later after the actual production happened.
So were you married at the time you started this?
I had just gotten married in September 2016, and the first story I told was December of that year.
And what does your hubby think of all the things that you have done since with this?
Yeah, he's so supportive, and we have two boys, so I'm a boy mom, and they've come to every exhibit opening. The exhibit that I built has toured, I think, 8 venues now.
Cool.
Since 2019, it's been to the National Cowboy and Western Heritage Museum. It's been to the Buffalo Bill Center of the West, which is Wyoming's only Smithsonian Museum.
Yep.
So it's traveled all around, and my boys have been with me for all of that. We just had my book launch event on the 10th. And, you know, my boys were helping me sign books. So, and my husband has been there, you know, holding down the fort when I need to. And he grew up in Wyoming too. So I think
that's cool.
Something that we relate with each other is we've all grown up around strong women.
Yeah.
And Wyoming women are that breed. There's a lot of grit, there's a lot of resilience. So my husband has grown up around that too, and really respects and appreciates that.
Cool. Todd Roberts, get in there.
So, Lindsay, you know, just three of the women that you profile in your book I find very captivating. The first being Alfie Ellis, the first Navajo lawmaker, female lawmaker in the state of Wyoming. not that American Indians don't live all over the United States and Native Americans live everywhere, but how did she find her way to Wyoming? And, you know, that's an interesting story to leave her tribe, her family, and so on and go on up there.
Yeah, so Afi's parents came to Jackson in the 50s. Both of her parents are Navajo and grew up on the reservation. They were both part of the assimilation effort where they went to boarding schools. So they left the reservation as children and both ended up in Jackson for trade jobs. Her dad was trained as a welder. Her mom worked in housekeeping. So Afi was born in Jackson, Wyoming, and her parents, and obviously she also is Navajo. Her journey to politics, though, she was the first person in her family to go to college, and then of course just breaking into the political realm, service, so, you know, civil service is a completely different field. She was mentored by one of the other women in the book, Clarine Law. She's the woman in my book who's in the Cadillac Eldorado.
Oh, yes, 1976.
One of my favorite photos in the book, and it's one of the most iconic images in the book, and she just showed up like that because she was a total boss lady pulling up in her convertible. But Clarine was a hotelier. She had a lot of properties. Afi's mom actually cleaned hotel rooms for Clarine, so Afi grew up helping her mom, and the experience kind of ignited something in her to want more for herself in life. Clarine Law, who was the hotel business owner, also was a long-term legislator. She served in the Wyoming state legislature for, I think, 7 terms, so 14 years, and she began mentoring Afi, and Afi is just someone who... One thing she told me, because there's a whole podcast component to these projects too, I really wanted to sit down and hear like the questions you're asking, like how did they get there? How did their life unfold? And a guiding question for her is just, how much do I have to give? And for her, she's a lawyer. So kind of serving as a legislator is a natural fit, but giving back and leaving a mark for the next generation is really important. One of the reasons she was inspired to run is she was actually observing session with her daughter. And at the time, there was only one woman serving in Wyoming State Senate, and she had just announced her retirement. And her daughter Marlo asked her, "Mom, are girls allowed to serve in the Senate?" And Afi thought, of course you can. Like, there's Bernadine Kraft. She's right there. But she had just announced her retirement. And so, you know, Afi had ideas of running, but it was really in that moment with her daughter and just imagining a Wyoming state senate with no women represented. She couldn't take the thought, and she ran and she won, and she became the first indigenous person ever to serve in Wyoming's state senate.
That is cool.
Did you find that, or did she say that she found more, was it more of an obstacle of her being Navajo and being in a different area tribally, or was it in the government, or was it being a woman that was more difficult for her in government?
You know, I'm not sure, because she was less immediately involved on the reservation. She always grew up off the reservation. Her parents grew up on the reservation, but she grew up in Jackson and was, I would say, more integrated. She did talk about getting teased for being Indian growing up, so I think that stayed with her. But I think she is a person who can intersect with all different people. She was obviously an amazing advocate for our reservation and indigenous people in Wyoming. But she was also a lawmaker who was able to be super effective. And most of our legislature is still male. We have one of the lowest representations of women. And I think she was a very effective legislator. So I can't say for certain if one of those kind of played in more, but I think she is a person who's been able to transcend a lot of that, actually, and just be a really great lawmaker and a really great civil servant.
All right, we got to take our very first commercial break here on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Women Shaping the West, Stories from Wyoming. The book is by Lindsay Linton Buck, and that is she is our guest here on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander Bunker de France, Todd Roberts in Los Angeles. We'll be back with much more after this.
Arizona, the land of cattle, copper, and cowboys. It's also the true West, where a large number of Westerns were filmed. For your next vacation, come out to where Wyatt Earp made a name for himself as a highly respected sheriff. Stay where Jimmy Stewart filmed Winchester 73.
That would be the White Stallion Ranch. Situated in the mountains just northwest of Tucson, the White Stallion Ranch is an award-winning dude ranch with 43 guest rooms and the hacienda. That's a five-bedroom, three-bathroom home, perfect for larger families, family reunions, and girlfriend getaways. Every guest room has a private patio with views of the cactus gardens, mountains, or corrals. Generous floor plans offer sunny, comfortable rooms. But you won't want to stay in your room. Outdoor activities are plentiful at the White Stallion Ranch. Horseback riding, hiking, shooting, archery, rock climbing, e-biking, and a weekly ranch rodeo are among the numerous activities that you'll enjoy on your ranch vacation. Go Western for your next getaway. The White Stallion Ranch. Book your vacation now online at whitestallionranch.com or call 520-297-0252.
This is Eb Wilkinson at Wilkinson Wealth Management. If you're within 10 to 15 years of retirement and you're putting off retirement planning, my advice to you is don't do that. Ignoring your retirement planning won't make it go away. It'll just make it worse. Give me a call and let's work on your plan together so you can retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
The Tucson Trap and Ski Club is one of the best-kept economic secrets in town. This 900-member group maintains one of the finest shotgun shooting ranges in the country, featuring trap, skeet, five-stand, and sporting clays fields, and hosts national and international events that bring thousands of people and millions of dollars into our community. The Spring Satellite Grand American Tournament alone involves 1,200 participants for 10 days. Learn more about this and their other contributions to our community at TucsonTrapAndSkeet.com.
Hey, you, give me another drink before the fight starts.
Say, wait a minute. When is this fight going to start?
When you find out I can't pay for these drinks.
This is the Voices of the West.
Adios, goodbye, amigos. I am leaving you today. Ain't nobody around this town that's gonna miss me anyway. This old money making's taking all the time I have to play. Mama, hush your mouth, I'm headed south, way down Texas way.
We are back on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker de France, and Todd Roberts with you. The dulcet tones of our friend there from Asleep at the Wheel.
Oh, I can remember when they were first starting out.
Oh, good.
Western Music Association.
Yeah, good, good, good stuff. In any event, our guest, Lindsay Linton Buck, and she's talking to us through or from Jackson, Wyoming. And we are talking about her particular book, which is Women Shaping the West, Stories from Wyoming. Bunker, get in there.
Well, you know, Lindsay, I want to get on a more personal level here because, you know, the publishing of a book is it can be an arduous journey. And as I understand, your publication date was back here on the 10th, just about 9 days ago. Now, did you have a big celebration and a blowout, or did you just sit back and say, thank God it's over?
Yeah, you kind of want to do a little of both. Honestly, we did have a big celebration. It's really important to me to bring people together when I can, especially because the 25 stories are contemporary women. They're real women doing important work right now. So we had Jasmine Pickner-Bell, who is the two-time world champion female hoop dancer who's featured in my project. She performed, which was incredible. And then we had a panel discussion with myself, the cover girl, Jessie Allen Gottwald, who owns Wyoming's highest elevation guest ranch at 9,200 feet. She's an incredibly multifaceted woman, former Miss Wyoming, hunting guide, yogi, women's wellness instructor, Knowles instructor. She is a Renaissance woman. To Marnie Peterson, she's a local scientist at CSO. And then Lynette St. Clair, who's an Eastern Shoshone linguist. And she's actually doing a lot of work in TV and film right now, which is exciting to ensure the Shoshone language is spoken accurately. So we kicked off the night with Jasmine performing. We had a really great conversation with all these women. And then I signed books, which was incredibly rewarding. And we sold out the event. We had over 200 people there, sold out of books. So, yeah, it was a great, great launch week. The book went to the number one new release on Amazon in the photo essay and portrait photography category, which was really awesome. And then I promptly got super sick at the end of the week. and now, like, this week, it's like, all right, picking it back up. A lot of my events are spread out throughout the year because Wyoming is very vast and large, and we're still kind of in our winter season. So still have a lot of events, but they're kind of spread out throughout the year.
I just want to mention something. I don't know if you belong to Western Writers of America, but your book would be, and you don't have to be a member to enter your book into for the Spur Awards. And like I said, that is a very prestigious award, and you have a very prestige-worthy book. So if you haven't done it, think about it.
Wonderful. Yeah, I appreciate that.
And also, I have another question. I like to delve back into the past, and I understand that National Geographic played a very, very formative part in your life.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, you read the book. Nice work.
I'm sneaky that way.
You know, I think the cool part about writing a book, there's been so many creative processes of this project, from the actual production and the adventure and going to sheep camp and flying in a Black Hawk helicopter with Wyoming's only Black Hawk, or only female Black Hawk pilot, to going up to Jesse's ranch, to capturing their photos, creating the podcast, creating the exhibit. The book was a different level where everything's permanent, it's more personal, it's excavating. And so it did bring up these memories that hadn't been brought up before of, you know, what were those earliest memories for me of being really fascinated by people and place and how they live their lives. And when I was growing up in Powell, which is this very small town in the northwest part of the state, my parents had a bookshelf with National Geographic magazines. I can credit my mom to exposing me to a world outside of Wyoming and art and beauty and culture. And I just remember being so fascinated by those yellow spines, and it led me to study history in college, minor in geography. I just really love people, and I find all of the differences of the world so incredible and fascinating. It then led me to photography. I wanted to be a National Geographic photographer when I first went back to school for photography. And, you know, eventually kind of shifted to go a more commercial route and corporate route and have my own studio, have a little more autonomy. But creating this project in a way for me was to explore the many worlds of Wyoming. And I realized early on that despite my very deep roots in our state, every time I would go out to connect with someone, it was just peeling back the layers and just this constant learning. I don't know about where you guys live, but in Wyoming, we spend a lot of time on the road, and you're mostly just getting from point A to point B. It's pretty surface level. You're maybe stopping for gas or maybe stopping for coffee, and that's about it. And this was a way for me to be a tourist in my own state and to just go so much deeper and to really get to spend time in all these communities that I'd maybe driven through, but that was about it. So it really was this incredibly expansive experience that also allowed me to meet some really fascinating people and capture a moment in their lives.
Well, you know, working as a commercial photographer and then as an instructor for Canon, those are obviously, you know, were preparatory for what you have currently accomplished. How much difference is commercial photography and teaching for you as, you know, taking that time as mirroring today?
Yeah, so my commercial photography business, it's also in portraiture. There are a lot of similarities that help me produce the project, and actually having my commercial portrait business helped me establish a reputation, and some of my clients became early sponsors of the project, so it was actually super helpful. I think also when you're working on the commercial level, people are paying you, so you need to deliver, and you have to establish cohesiveness, consistency, a certain quality, and so I think having my business helped set me up for this project, which was more personal, but to think of almost myself as the client, like I was still trying to produce at this really high level. I'd say the biggest difference is with my commercial photography work, because people are paying me, there's not as much room for that spontaneity or surprise. My work is highly digital. With my commercial work, I shoot tethered into my big computer, into Capture One, which is a professional capture program where your images are popping up on your big screen, and not versus just checking the back of your camera to make sure everything looks
see
right.
How many shots you got left on the roll?
What's that?
You're seeing how many shots you got left on the roll.
Bunker shoots.
Yeah,
bunker
yeah,
still
like
shoots.
Like I shot film for this project, and I would travel 7 hours to go meet someone, and I would leave, and I would just cross my fingers, like I hope I got the shot. But then you get the film back, and you get that surprise and that magic. And also, you know, as you guys know, film has that beautiful grain.
Sure.
I really wanted to kind of capture the physicality of this place, and that translates to the people that live here too. So I felt just artistically that was a really great match, but it also meant I didn't have to spend as much time on my computer editing, because in my commercial work, I spend a lot of time on my computer. I did not want that for my personal project. So yeah, I think they both went hand in hand, but creatively, I approached the project in a more documentary style, which was really fun.
Well, speaking of your feedback, you had photo shows at the Buffalo Bill Center of the West and the University of Wyoming. How was the feedback, and how did that help you?
Yeah, so it was kind of crazy timing, because the exhibit launched in October 2019, and we had a long run for that first show at the Buffalo Bill Center of the West. I think we closed in August of 2020. But as you guys know, we had the pandemic in March. Everything shut down. And so the exhibit launched, but we were really hoping to appeal to all the school groups and kind of local populations during the school year. The museum was able to reopen, but there was a period where it was closed, and they did reopen in time for the summer season, which is great, because Cody is a gateway to Yellowstone, and Yellowstone gets millions of visitors. It went to the University of Wyoming right after that, and they were still doing kind of a remote, like hybrid situation there too. So those two exhibits were, the way I look back on it now, I'm like, it's pretty amazing that our world was altered and shut down for a period of time, but the exhibit kept going and it kept touring for 2 years. Then it had a little break, then it relaunched for 2 years at the National Cowboy and Western Heritage Museum and did another big tour around Wyoming. What I've found is every exhibit, people are discovering the work for the first time and in Wyoming too, which is, I've always thought, like, at this point, like, you've heard about it, right? It's been around a while, but I think that's what's really been neat about the project, is the exhibit brings people together, and a lot of people together, and a lot of people are discovering it for the first time. So even though these stories are not new to me, it continues to just keep creating these ripple effects, which has been pretty incredible.
Okay, we got to do our next commercial break here on Amo Franzi's Voices of the West because we're running way past. And Todd, you will be up next.
It's so good.
I know, it's so good. And Todd will be up next with his...
Great questions, by the way.
We try. You know, it doesn't always work, but we try. Anyway...
You're doing great.
Thank you. Harry Alexander, Bunker to France, Todd Roberts. It's Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. We'll be back with Lindsay in just a bit.
Imagine switching back to pen and paper to run your business. Every year, we become more and more dependent upon our technology. If your network is not set up properly, you're just one click or one email away from losing data critical to your operation. Arizona Computer Guru offers a host of services to prevent and protect you from disaster. From online backup services to email filtering to fully managed network services, Arizona Computer Guru is here to keep your network secure, your data safe, and your budget in the black. To schedule your free consultation, call 304-8300.
This is Eb Wilkinson at Wilkinson Wealth Management. If you're within 10 to 15 years of retirement and you're putting off retirement planning, my advice to you is don't do that. Ignoring your retirement planning won't make it go away. It'll just make it worse. Give me a call and let's work on your plan together so you can retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
The Tucson Trap and Ski Club dates from 1948 and is now at 7800 West Ol Ajo Highway. The club owns 80 acres and leases 300 more from Pima County that supports 50 trap fields, 15 skeet fields, 2 5-stand fields, 2 sporting plays courses with 12 stations each, a 9,000-square-foot clubhouse, 200 full-service RV hookups for members, and free Wi-Fi. This expansive facility gives enough room to host major national and international events annually, bringing thousands of people to the community. Check it out at TucsonTrapAndSki.com.
Cow's nothing but a lot of trouble tied up in a leather bag. Horse ain't much better.
This is the Voices of the West.
We are back on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker to France, Todd Roberts in Los Angeles, and our guest is Lindsay Buck, and the book is all about Wyoming women. And I play the theme to the High Chaparral there, Lindsay, in case you did not recognize that, because Bunker to France was in like 52 of those 54 episodes. Mm-hmm. Of the High Chaparral, and well, he was prancing around like he was riding a horse when the thing was playing. So,
if he didn't play it, I'm out the door.
Yeah, my contract. That.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that fun,
Lindsay? Lindsay, try not to visualize that because it's only going to distract you from the rest of the show. The question that I have at this moment, I have several, but we'll just go with this one. I know that, as you said, that the National Geographic magazines your parents had inspired you, your parents inspired you. But what photographers inspired you? What photographers did you look at their work and say, I want to do that? How can I do that?
Yeah, I mean, I remember going to museums with Edward Curtis's work and just that the volume and scale of what he created, that record. I remember that making a huge impression on me before I ever wanted to become a photographer. When I did go back to photography school, which was after I had gone to school for history and geography, I went back to Powell, actually, to Northwest College. It's the community college in my hometown. I have a great 2-year commercial photography program. And on the walls of the studios were posters of another really iconic American photographer named Rodney Smith. He sadly passed away a handful of years ago. He was also a film shooter. He was more in the commercial realm, but he created very whimsical, beautiful images. And love Annie Leibovitz. Obviously, her book, Women, was a kind of model and guide, and when I saw that book, I thought maybe I could do that for Wyoming. Another one of my photography mentors is Andrew Eccles. He's an entertainment photographer in LA, but an incredible portrait photographer. Went to his workshop in Santa Fe, and he continues to be a mentor. So yeah, actually a lot of film shooters in there, but I think photographers who are trying to create this larger record of people and place. And I think that's what I'm trying to do ultimately with my work too.
Do you like to shoot in black and white as well?
I do have a few black and white shots in the book. I very intentionally shot in color for this story because I think we have so many black and white images of the West already.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And I wanted to do something different. Yeah, I think I do. I am more drawn to color, okay, ultimately.
Well, tell me this.
Lindsay,
go ahead. Sorry.
How far is the town you grew up in from Pinedale?
Well, I'm actually closer to Pinedale now in Jackson.
Okay.
It's about 45 minutes through a canyon and another 45 minutes. So Pinedale is closer to me now. It's probably 5 hours from where I grew up.
Okay. I have friends that, my good friend Kevin Warren, whose family started the prep school I went to in Northern Arizona, he did the fantasy that all, I think most males have, which is he packed up his truck and he drove to Wyoming to become a cowboy, and he ended up meeting a woman. And he met her, and they are in love, and they're married and have grown children, and they just moved back from Pinedale to Sedona. They lived in Sedona for many years. He's now running the school that I was part of. But I always ask that because Pinedale, the way they talk about it so lovingly and glowingly, is just, to me, is like a little bit of a magical place, as is, I think, the rest of Wyoming. They got married in a church that was a log cabin.
Mm.
So, cool. Just kind of a interesting, definitely off the beaten track, as it were.
Well, small towns generally have that kind of magic when when you have a big city like Tucson or Los Angeles or the boroughs in Los Angeles, you don't get that kind of thing, that kind of vibe, like you do if you're in St. David, Arizona, or Bisbee.
People.
Not even Bisbee anymore. You go to Benson, Arizona.
People.
You run into real people, just like Bunker said.
I think that's partly what I experienced when producing this project, is because Wyoming is very, very vast geographically, but we are very small scale. And so when I wanted to tell Marilyn Kite's story, who was our first female Supreme Court justice, chief Supreme Court justice, I could just call her up, which I think is pretty remarkable.
Right. Yeah.
You might run into her at the supermarket.
Every single person I asked to be in this project said yes. So I feel like I also feel like these women, they wanted me to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
They know it's not all the opportunities exist in Wyoming. You have to, in many cases, create those for yourself. I really feel like so many of them also just wanted, they wanted their stories to be shared, but they wanted me to succeed as a Wyoming woman coming home.
Mm-hmm.
And so this book is really gratifying because it's, yes, it's my book, but it's this collective, and I get to share it with all these incredible people.
Well, tell me this. What is the Vice Chair Wyoming Women's Foundation all about?
Yeah, so that is our statewide foundation for women and girls, Wyoming Women's Foundation. And I serve as chair now, actually. So it's been a big year with the book and stepping into the chair position. It's an advisory board. We're part of the Wyoming Community Foundation. And we exist to work towards economic self-sufficiency for women and opportunities for girls. So we do some advocacy with the legislature in the areas of education and just any sort of economic development. We're a grant-making organization, so that's one of our most fun board meetings when we get to give money away to organizations around the state that are working for women and girls. And then our biggest fundraiser is actually an all-woman antelope hunt. It was one of the first in the country. People come from all over, and that's also a piece of economic self-sufficiency. Some of these women are first-time hunters, and they're learning how to hunt for their family. People that are experienced hunters, that if they have harvested an animal and don't want to keep that meat, all that money or all that meat is donated to the community. It's a really organization, and I do really enjoy working on the statewide scale. So that is an area where I get to make an impact more with like the structure of Wyoming, whereas the project was capturing these stories and on the creative level, getting to work on this board, I get to really understand kind of what the bigger picture is for women and girls in our state.
I also understand that you're a podcaster, and so, you know, obviously, because that's what we do, I would like to kind of hear a little bit about your experiences as podcaster, Crisscrossing Wyoming.
And you got some, and if you have some, and if you have some tips, we'd be happy to hear them.
Anything that would help us out of this situation.
Please help. Please.
No, what you guys are doing is great. I think the partnership model is the way to go, having the conversations.
Yeah,
awesome.
Yeah.
I created a podcast with this project. So the podcast is not active currently, but I did know I would be sitting down having these really rich conversations with these women. I was going to record them, but I didn't want to keep them to myself. And, you know, over 10 years ago when I was first starting this project, podcasts were not the mainstream thing they are
right
now. They were still pretty new.
Yep.
And I just thought it would be a really great medium to add to the project. And I also think there's just something about, and I'd be curious to hear your guys' thoughts on this, just hearing the resonance of people's voices, I love. And the age range of people in my project, it was up to Mickey Tillman, who's a sheep rancher. She was 89 when I told her story. So just like the wisdom, the life, lived in her voice.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, there's something that only audio can capture. And a couple of the women in the project have sadly passed away since I featured them. And I think their image keeps them alive. But going back to listen to their podcast episode and hearing their voice, it brings it to life on a whole other level.
Well, for sure.
So, not actively podcasting right now, but I love the conversation, and I think it's definitely going to be part of my creative process for whatever the next project is.
Well, this program started out originally on commercial radio, and I was the producer, and then I decided to retire. Good luck. And our founder, Emil, left the radio station as well. And so we took it to the internet and have attempted to live stream it and do all kinds of fancy-dancy things to it. But, you know, it just comes out as a cow. So
we'll learn what we're doing one of these days.
One of these days, we reckon we will.
Yeah.
But, you know, we think that this is a viable format. Just the talking, you know.
Well, it's history, heritage, tradition, and you know.
Well, it also leaves, I think, one of the great benefits of podcasting or radio is that it is very much like reading. It leaves a lot to the imagination of the listener.
Exactly.
So they get to create that character in their head, or I try to create a face around the voice,
and it's or
the
a
image as it expands.
And as we like to say, costumes, scenery, and special effects for today's program were provided by your imagination. We got to do our final commercial break here on Abel Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker DeFrance, Todd Roberts with you. And we'll be right back.
Arizona, the land of cattle, copper, and cowboys. It's also the true West, where a large number of Westerns were filmed. For your next vacation, come out to where Wyatt Earp made a name for himself as a highly respected sheriff. Stay where Jimmy Stewart filmed Winchester 73.
That would be the White Stallion Ranch. Situated in the mountains just northwest of Tucson, the White Stallion Ranch is an award-winning dude ranch with 43 guest rooms and the Hacienda. That's a five-bedroom, three-bathroom home, perfect for larger families, family reunions, and girlfriend getaways. Every guest room has a private patio with views of the cactus gardens, mountains, or corrals. Generous floor plans offer sunny, comfortable rooms, but you won't want to stay in your room. Outdoor activities are plentiful at the White Stallion Ranch. Horseback riding, hiking, shooting, archery, rock climbing, e-biking, and a weekly ranch rodeo are among the numerous activities that you'll enjoy on your ranch vacation. Go Western for your next getaway. The White Stallion Ranch. Book your vacation now online at whitestallionranch.com or call 520-297-0252.
This is Eb Wilkinson of Wilkinson Wealth Management, where we manage money for gun owners. When people turn 50, something miraculous happens. They start to get serious about retirement planning. They've done very well so far and want to be certain they power into the retirement they've earned. Let me guide you to retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
Hello, I'm Mr. Red.
No doubt you've heard about rescue groups for dogs and cats, but did you know there's a rescue group for horses? That's right, it's called Horse It Around Rescue. Founders Steve Boyce and Teresa Worrell are helping out all those equine victims of neglect and cruelty by giving them a place to restore their health and wellness. And Horse It Around provides a nurturing and natural environment where horses can be horses, so they can be adopted out into forever homes. More than 120 horses, mules, and donkeys have been adopted out, but like everything else, it costs money to run the project. Horse It Around is a 501c3 nonprofit located in Southeast Arizona. Your tax-deductible donations to Horse It Around will go a long way so those horses can be horses. Check out the website, horseitaroundrescue.org. Make a difference in a horse's life. That's horseitaroundrescue.org.
Besides bringing millions a year into this community with national and international events, the Tucson Trap and Skeet Club at 7800 West Old Ajo Highway services the local shooting sports community with a 380-acre site featuring trap, skeet, five stand, and two sporting clays fields, as well as a 9,000-square-foot clubhouse, which all is available to local shooters, and soon, an archery range. Check it out at TucsonTrapAndSkeet.com or take a drive out west of town and see it for yourself. New members or single-day use, welcome.
Oh, and something else. You know, women down there can vote.
Vote?
Yeah.
Women vote?
Yeah.
Oh! That, it's times like these. It just makes me give thanks that I don't know how to read.
This is the Voices of the West.
Francie's Voices of the West, Harry Alexander, Bunker to France, and Todd Roberts with you. A little Bronco Billy ragtime piano there.
Yeah.
And Lindsay, the little cut there from Ken Curtis's Festus was for you. You know,
I thought you might be setting me up.
You know, I just realized this show basically is about suffrage in Wyoming still today.
Suffrage, we're suffering.
No, women's suffrage.
Hey? Now let's talk just a shade. Let's just talk a shade about women's suffrage and how that started in Wyoming. Lindsay.
What a history!
Yeah, it's pretty incredible history. So Wyoming was the first state to enfranchise women, to recognize women's right to vote, and also recognize women's right to hold office. So it's really that second piece of that legislation which empowered women in Wyoming so much further than many of their American contemporaries at the time. It meant we gave the country its first female governor, Nellie Taylor Ross. She actually went on to become the first female director of the U.S. Mint, and she held that position for 20 years.
Wow.
Esther Hobart Morris, she was the first female justice of the peace. She was elected to that position. She was really involved in the national women's suffrage movement nationally. And so many other women in small towns who were small town mayors, or they were game wardens or county clerks because of that legislation. So it's a part of our history that I'm super proud of. Our official motto is equal rights. And, you know, in many ways, my project connects past to yes. present. It's that courage, that grit, and just stepping forward. That is a big part of our past. And I think all the stories in my book, the contemporary stories, have that same spirit of contribution and impact.
It's a great thread in the tapestry of the history of Wyoming.
No kidding. And obviously, history has gone on, or civilization has gone on, since women have received the right to vote.
And think about this. The first female black voters were in Wyoming.
Yeah. I mean, you know, y'all got lots of firsts up there.
Oh, you got more firsts than I don't know what.
No, that's a good thing. Okay, it is time for our moment here where we do selfless promotion. And we are not promoting ourselves, but you, Miss Lindsay Lindenbuck, are promoting yourself.
Just load it on us.
Load it on.
Okay, so I just get to tell you to buy my book.
Yeah, there you go.
Wow.
Where can we buy your
book? That's not too direct, is it, Lindsay?
That's what we're here for. Women Shaping the West, Stories from Wyoming. You can buy it on my website, which is shapingthewest.com. On that website, you can see a link to the exhibit and the podcast and the other aspects of the project as well. It's also available online where books are sold.
Including Amazon,
including bookshop.com. You okay. could go to your local bookstore and request it there.
Barnes & Noble.
Yeah, Barnes & Noble.
Yep.
All right. Very, very good.
That's cool.
Now, for the second most important question of the hour.
This is the one that the show either rises or sinks on this question.
Todd Roberts, your question. You go, sir.
All right. No pressure, Lindsay, but there's a lot, so just realize that. Your favorite Western film or television show?
Oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm blanking on the name right now. Longmire. I know that's
easy.
Yeah.
I was in Santa Fe for a workshop, and they're filming. And that was a show my husband and I loved to watch. I also went to my undergrad with a woman that plays Longmire's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Katie. I'm trying to think of her name.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't think of her real name. But yeah, I mean, and we had the opportunity, 2 years ago, Bunker, to interview Craig from who wrote the books. No, that was in Tombstone.
Yeah, that's it. That was the book fair in Tombstone.
Hello, I'm not listening. And so, yeah.
That was last year.
Yeah. Okay, whatever.
Yeah.
And
nice.
I'm still finding a calendar. Anyway, that was good stuff. So, yeah, good choice there. Man, we love Longmire as well, my wife and I. And
Craig Johnson is a terrific writer and a nice guy.
Yeah.
They have made the whole town of Buffalo, Wyoming, kind of dedicated to that show because it's technically based in that town, even though it wasn't filmed directly in Wyoming.
You know, one of the things I really liked about that show is it showed to the world how many really fine indigenous actors there are.
Exactly. And we've talked about that umpteen times on our Movie Saturday program. So, yeah. All right. Lindsay Lindenbuck, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. We really appreciate it. And
thank you, guys. Yeah, appreciate it.
We learned a lot, I think.
I think so.
And, yes.
Hopefully there'll be no test, but, you know.
I got a crypt sheet.
Yeah, in any event. Lindsay, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Appreciate it very much so. All right.
Harry Bunker and Todd, thank you.
All right, and that'll be it for this edition of Abel Francie's Voices of the West.
78, 79, 80 O's, all you women shaping the West.
Thanks for listening to Abel Francie's Voices of the West.